Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander, and once again, I would like to welcome our listeners to the Socialist Insight. Every other week, we have Alan Mackey. He joins our program and discuss many interesting topics that are relevant to the socialist left and to left organizations. And today, we will be discussing a group and an organization that Alan is has very close ties to, and he has been working in the organizational phases of the new Progressive Alliance. And Alan, again, thank you for joining the program today.
Well, thanks for having me again, Stuart.
Now, Alan, part of this program that we have today, I was recently had a meeting with Bob Maskey. He joins our program from time to time, and he talks about a lot of the things dealing with left organizations, political parties, political groups. And part of our conversation, I found out that he and I, we have a mutual interest. He just recently became involved with the New Progressive Alliance. I had endorsed the platform of the New Progressive Alliance back in 2012 when I was running as a candidate in the 2012 presidential election. But, Bob, some of the questions that Bob had, I'm going to bring those up today, such as how long has the organization been around, who are some of the players in organizations, what the platform is about in organizations. So anyway, Alan, that's what we're going to be talking about today. So first of all, Alan, I'd just like to start, tell us very briefly, what is the New Progressive Alliance, and how long has the organization been in existence? What is the mission of the New Progressive Alliance?
Well, the mission of the New Progressive Alliance, to make it short, is to try and help us break free from this two-party trap that we're stuck in with the Democrats and Republicans. And the New Progressive Alliance was founded around 2010 by a group of people that they thought Obama should be challenged in the Democratic primary. And some names came forward. I think there were about 10 names brought forward of people that might be candidates against him within the Democratic Party. And none of those people who had been somewhat critical of Obama were interested in running. And from there, people started to explore a little further if it was even possible to change anything from within the Democratic Party. And it's been our opinion pretty much unanimously now that it's pretty much impossible to get any kind of real change out of the Democratic Party. And with that, we started working towards bringing progressive groups and organizations and parties together around what we call the Unified Progressive Platform. And I think we had something like 50-some candidates in the last election that agreed to support the Unified Progressive Platform. Yeah, and then there was Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson and a number of other independent candidates and Socialist Party candidates and a lot of Green Party candidates that endorsed the Unified Progressive Platform. And we sort of figured that...
One of the things that you mentioned Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson endorsing the campaign, and when I look at the politics even of both those candidates, and I look at many of the other individuals that had endorsed the platform of the party, there's some extreme differences as far as the political ideology of those individuals. How is it that you could have people coming from extremes endorsing the same platform? I'm trying to see the relevancy.
Yeah, the way that that's accomplished is because we come from a position that we should be able to unite people around some very basic solutions to problems. And we put forward a 10-point program, and we believe everything sort of revolves around peace and ending these wars and militarism. And from there, we went to saying, you know, we have to begin to build a movement that's both, and, you know, we take the position that movements have to be built in the streets, in the workplaces, and in the electoral arena. We don't think it's one or the other, that these things are all mutual, that they're avenues of struggle that we got to all be participating in if we're going to have real change. And so we brought together this 10-point program after talking to a whole bunch of people. It was discussed all over the internet and everything. And we came up with 10 points, peace first, then number two, full employment at a living wage, then saving the environment, number four, a real social safety net, number five, Medicare for all, six, fair trade, seven, human rights and civil liberties, eight, election reform, nine, corporate accountability and reform, and 10, infrastructure investment. And we found that there were a lot of people that could come together around these issues and solutions to the problems that we're having that couldn't agree, you know, on a lot of other things, ideological. We knew that there were a lot of ideological disagreements and everything among these people. But everyone seemed to be able to agree that we had to, if we couldn't come together and have one party running, we could at least be pushing for a common program so we were all moving in the same direction.
Right. Now, I'm looking at some of the some of those 10 points that you had mentioned. Now, obviously, these are points that most candidates running for public office, for the most part, wouldn't disagree with. But looking at the candidates that you were asking to endorse the platform and looking at their individual platforms, such as Rocky Anderson, Jill Stein, she had her green program, the Green Deal, and of course Rocky Anderson had his of how he was going to, his program is going to help to reform capitalism. But how did, when you look at the candidates, how did you see that their platforms, if they didn't really line up with what you have here on your 10-point program, how did the organization deal with that as far as choosing the people that you would go after to endorse your campaign? Or was it more or less a blanket that we would send out and ask as many candidates as possible to endorse this 10-point program?
Yeah, essentially that's what we did. We asked as many candidates as possible if they would endorse this 10-point program. While there were, you know, a lot, like you say, big differences with Rocky Anderson between Jill Stein and yourself, probably Rocky Anderson would never support socialism as a solution like I would. And
one of the reasons why I asked, when I look at Rocky Anderson, he was mentioning under certain conditions how he would be supportive. He would be supportive of us going into various armed conflicts into various countries, as long as Congress would go along with those programs. When I look at my position as a socialist and with the Socialist Party of USA, we seriously want peace first. We do not want a Congress or president or administration that is constantly pursuing imperialism and also pursuing one war after another. So when you look at the candidates, it seems like it could be almost hypocritical. Someone said, I endorse this platform, peace first, but if you look at what their agenda is about and what they're really supporting, they really don't support peace first. They basically support what's the status quo, what is already going on under this two-party system that we presently have. So that's the reason why I was presenting that question.
Well, you know, I think you're going to have those differences, and that's why we're not all in the same political party. And we're looking for points that bring people together rather than keep us divided. And all that we're saying is that can we agree on these basic points to come together on, and then from there discuss our differences in the process of working for these reforms. And the NPA itself pretty much sees that we have a struggle going to take power away from Wall Street. We're talking about taking political and economic power away from Wall Street. And I think, you know, that's what we got to realize, that's our long-term objective. It would be better if we could accomplish it in the short term, and we're going to keep talking about it. But at the same time, I think most people in MPA realize that if we come together around these basic reforms, we'll very quickly galvanize into a movement and realize that, you know, we can't reform capitalism and we can't reform Wall Street, that at some point we have to challenge these people for real power. And, you know, that's the direction we're heading. Now, there may be some candidates that can't go along with that, but that's not what we're asking people to support at this point. You know, and right now there's a big discussion taking place that was initiated by the Peace and Freedom Party out of California to bring people together now around a 5 or 6 point program, which I think is even better. And it's it starts with peace first and ending U.S. interventions. And then full employment. We think that there should be full employment legislation where Congress and the president are required by law to come up with a full employment economy. And from there, we say we need reforms to the healthcare system, that probably single payer is the way to go as a first step towards a national public healthcare system. And, you know, we need to have some real change when it comes to the environment, that we're just on a totally disastrous course when it comes to global warming and climate change, and that has to be stopped and ended. And we think that these points all pretty much come together. And the reason they all come together is because, realistically, we're not going to be able to solve any of these problems unless we end these wars and use the peace dividends from ending these wars and the militarism, that complete military buildup that keeps going and going and going, and use that money for human needs. That's the basis of creating real change in this country and what we got to unite people around. And so, you know, this is sort of refining what the program is of the NPA, and I think NPA can agree with that 5 point or 6 point program, whatever people decide on. Maybe it'll be 7 points. I don't know for sure. You know, we haven't made that decision. There's going to be a big telephone conference coming up on Sunday the 23rd at 3 o'clock.
Oh, when is that going to be?
This coming Sunday, on the 23rd at 3 o'clock. That's 3 o'clock Central Time. If, I'm not sure the number to call in yet. They haven't given that out, but if anybody wants that number, they can get in touch with me, and I'll be happy to see that they're put on the list so that they can become involved in that telephone conference.
You can put me first on that list, okay?
Okay, sure.
Who are some of the players that's working with the – what is your position with the New Progressive Alliance?
I'm a member of the National Steering Committee. And
okay,
on the national,
and who are some of the people working? I know I'm on the National Steering Committee.
Right.
But who are some of the other players on the National Steering Committee?
Paul Barrow, Nicole Bolio, and Curtis Bucanaga. They're from the Leech Lake Indian Reservation here in Minnesota. And Cian Jasmine, Jill Stein. She took a leave of absence to run for president. I think that she's becoming active again. And then originally Cornel West was on the steering committee.
Cornel West also?
Yeah.
What about now?
But now he was removed somewhat on his own initiative and a lot on our initiative, because he finally said that he was going to support Obama, and we said that wasn't feasible with the New Progressive Alliance, that it was impossible to have somebody on the steering committee that would support a warmonger like Obama, you know.
Right.
And Richard Winger, who's involved in a lot of independent...
Richard Winger also?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
yeah,
Kevin Z.
He works for ballot access.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Equal ballot access for everybody, which is an important part of political reform. And then Kevin Z's.
Now, do you have plans of running candidates with the New Progressive Alliance as well?
No, not at this point anyways. And I don't know if we'll ever, you know, we more or less see our position as being a catalyst to try and get people to run either as independents or on another political party's platform, as long as they include the NPA platform and program. And this is the direction we think we have to go with NPA, is to be a catalyst to sort of initiate independent alternative political activities.
Now, what about conventions or meetings? And another important area I want to get into in a few minutes is, what are you doing in regards to reaching out to the youth and being able to bring youth into this? But what are you doing in regards, let's start out with meetings, conventions, activities where people, do they come to a center, I mean, a location throughout the throughout the country where they can have like a yearly convention, or how do you do that?
Well, we haven't progressed to that point yet. And, you know, in our organization, it's right now it's sort of a loose-knit organization. We're at the stage right now where we're trying to set up what we call state liaisons in every state who will go out and search out people in those states to bring them on to a statewide steering committee and maybe set up some congressional committees of the new Progressive Alliance to push things in a you know, progressive direction around our program, unified program and platform. And eventually, I think people are looking to, at some point, coming together in a physical place to begin discussing these things. Right now, the discussions have mainly been over the telephone and by the internet and over the website and on Facebook. That's been our main means of communication with people. It's
you're on Facebook also? The organization has a Facebook site?
Yeah, yeah. And,
okay, and what do they go to? Just New Progressive Alliance, is that it?
Yep. Just go to Facebook and type in New Progressive Alliance, and you'll come to our page. And there's a lot of activity going on that page.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah, we've got there's a lot of people comment. There's people doing a lot of good research from the New Progressive Alliance. They're not members of the steering committee, but they're very active, and they do a lot of research into Obama's what he says and what he actually does, and then they post those things, the hypocrisy of everything that, you know, surrounding Obama, and the same thing with the Republicans. You know, we want to prove to people that we are stuck in this two-party trap and we have to bust free from it, and part of that is bringing people the facts and doing this educational work that's required, and, you know, so that's been a main priority of ours, is doing that. And we realize that, you know, it takes more than just having an internet presence, that we eventually you got to bring people together physically in a place where we can discuss, you know, ideas and share ideas. But right now, what people have to understand is the New Progressive Alliance isn't a fundraising organization or anything. If somebody wants to make a donation, you know, fine. But right now, it's an all-volunteer organization. Nobody's paid to do anything in the organization. Actually, you know, we put a lot of our own money into taking these initiatives. I forgot to mention, too, David Swanson is on the National Steering Committee. He's a very active person in the anti-war movement.
Now, as I mentioned, there's no meetings. This, right now, only meetings you have are just over the phone conferences. Is this the first phone conference that you'd be having, or have you had those?
Okay,
the
phone conference coming up is in an MPA event, although MPA supports having this conference. The conference that's coming up is an initiative of the California Peace and Freedom Party mainly, and several other organizations. I think there's about 12 organizations involved. I don't remember the names of them all, but they're fairly smaller organizations, but they're scattered around the country. And, you know, from Florida to New York to Michigan and Wisconsin and Minnesota and from the western states. So there's quite a diversity of as far as, you know, the regions people come from, which I think is good. It's something that New Progressive Alliance, you know, we're not at the stage of having all that yet, but we hope that
So this phone conference is being sponsored by the Peace and Freedom Party in California?
Yeah, that's. I don't know. I really don't know if it's fair to say it's being sponsored by them. I would say initiated by them.
Or being initiated by them.
Yeah. The conference. Eventually, there's gonna. Hopefully, there's gonna be an organization. This has all been in discussion for over a year now between these organizations and individuals. Eventually, we hope that there will be an actual organization and it will have a name and everything. And I know from my participation in it, what I've suggested is that we need some kind of people's lobby, and that's what we should try to become. And we should have actual legislation written up and resolutions drafted that, you know, if a people's representative was elected to Congress, this is what they would be supporting, so people can see the difference between Obama's Obamacare and what legislation for real single payers, a step towards national health care, would be like. And I don't know if that will be agreeable to everybody, but that's been my proposal within this organization. And I think that there's quite a few other people that sort of support that. So.
And has there been any meetings with the steering committee by phone or any other means, the steering committee of the New Progressive Alliance?
No, it's mainly been people just contacting each other when we think that there's something needed to be talked about.
There's a lot to be talked about.
Yeah, exactly. And the discussions have been mainly going on through email. We have a email list. I think you've been receiving the emails. And some discussion takes place as a result of email and some between individuals. But we're not
I found out from Bob that I'm probably not receiving the emails because they have my old email address. So that's my fault that I haven't been receiving those. But let me ask you, because there's a lot of issues out there that this administration, what's happening now, we don't need to worry about, you know, when an election year comes around, but it's a lot of issues where this administration and the politics is going on in Washington, D.C., needs to be challenged, especially
exactly.
When we're looking at big issues right now. Like, look what is taking place in Syria. Look at we can see that. Obamacare is going down in flames as far as having any credibility when it comes to the cost of these programs. What is being done by organizations such as the New Progressive Alliance, where they have some apparatus already set up in place where they can be able to challenge, even just by having a spokesperson to be able to challenge what is taking place on the political scene in Washington, and also international? We got big issues like what is taking place in Syria. We're almost on the verge of another war as we see U.S. imperialism going to another notch.
Exactly.
So who is the spokesperson? Who is on the front line right now to be able to say this is the position of NPA?
Well, I don't think NPA has taken a position yet on the issue of Syria.
Not just Syria, but on any issues when it deals with national or international issues, when we're talking about an organization which represents, you know, the concerns of the left.
Right. Well, like I said, the main thing has been on our Facebook page and then on the our website, but the Facebook page has been most active in taking up the issues of the day. And we've challenged, you know, the Obama thinking on health care and everything else. And if you look at our Facebook page, that's all there, and people have, you know, responded to that pretty well. A lot of it is just people helping us get out the word because,
right.
You know, the mass media isn't going to do this for us. So
no.
We have a monthly, I think it comes out almost monthly, like a newsletter that goes out to all the members and stuff. And, you know, that creates discussion. And it's been a more or less, it isn't a top-down organization. It's been a group of people that have been able to work real well together and not argue about a lot of things because we know that there's some major issues that we got to come together around and we pretty much agree on those things. So I think that we probably will be taking positions on things like Syria. I think everybody
Great.
Would agree with my position that, you know, the United States shouldn't be intervening at all in Syria. And,
Great.
You know, this whole thing about humanitarian war and stuff, was, you know, it's just plain wrong. It's just another
imperialist war. Here we see one side, you know, arming the rebels. The other side is trying to help the government that's already in place. And I'm not saying I agree with either side. What I see is not a, you know, we have taken, they have looked at the same situation that happened in Libya, that has happened in Greece, and is happening throughout the Middle East. And basically, you know, they don't, you know, it's not launching an all-out war in the Middle East, but basically we see that there's a struggle for political power. And these are issues that what we're looking at when I look at the platform of the New Progressive Alliance, peace first. So
right.
These are things that we need to be speaking out, or having individuals or whoever represents the organization to be able to show what speak on the position of this party. And, of course, you understand my position is that we don't need to be involved in these dirty wars, and we don't need to be the ones that are instigating these conflicts in these other countries. And that's what's happening. That's what we saw happening in Iraq and in Afghanistan. Basically, we can see that we create a situation, weapons of mass destruction. Where are the weapons? Well, there weren't any weapons, but those people, they wanted democracy anyway. You know,
yeah.
But I think the American people at this point, they are tired of all of these lies that are coming out of Washington, D.C., where we are continuously in one war after another. And that's where we need organizations like the New Progressive Alliance. Let me ask you, who are some of the – how many members – you say you sent out a newsletter. How many people are actually on a membership roster or memberships have a membership with the New Progressive Alliance at this point?
We don't really – we have a volunteer sheet people can sign up on, and I'm not sure the exact
number of
that.
Oh, it's the volunteer sheet?
But,
okay.
But I think
so
that we
not,
probably –
so like it's not like a paid membership or anything like that?
No, no.
Oh, I see. Okay.
If you want to become a volunteer, then you just fill out a sheet on the on our website saying that what you'd like to do and can do and how you can help and stuff like that. I think that right now we have an outreach to probably a couple thousand people around the country through our steering committee and everything.
A couple thousand, that's good.
Yeah. And you know, most of it relies, though, on the initiative of the people that are on the steering committee and the people that are going to be the state liaisons. They'll be responsible. We'll be responsible for getting everything out. You know, like if you take the issue of Syria, I was going to say, you know, I agree with you completely on that. I pretty much think that everybody in NPA would agree with the position that you take on Syria. I would say this, though, about Syria. The United States, what they've done in all these countries, including Syria, they've gone out and created such a situation and divisions among the people that it will be hard to straighten this out for probably decades, because they're drumming up so much hatred between the peoples. And this is their objective.
What they do is they're creating division within a country. And after they create division, then they try to come up with their own solutions.
Exactly.
And supporting the opposition.
Because there's so many divisions, it makes it easier for imperialism to take
exactly.
advantage and assert
exactly.
their...
It's fertile ground.
Yep, exactly. And
we have seen this happen in close to a dozen countries right now in that part of the world. I mean, it's fertile ground for, you know, NATO, the U.S., and the NATO allies, for them to go in and just wreak havoc. And also to dominate the resources, and also to disrupt the politics of those countries. Very fertile ground.
You know, we're in a very dangerous situation as we go into the tail end of the Obama administration, because he's a lame duck, and we know what his background is and what he intends to do. And it's not good. It's not good for humanity overall, and it's not good for this country. And, you know, we've got to, you know, exert every effort possible to stop Obama from carrying out his Wall Street agenda of imperialist wars abroad, paid for with austerity measures here at home. And if people think that things are going to get better as we go further into Obama's second period here, I think they're, very, very mistaken. It's going to get worse.
Oh, things are going to get much worse. I mean, as I mentioned, I wanted to come back to students. And are you finding that many students are coming on board and joining the getting involved with the New Progressive Alliance? Younger people, are they becoming involved with the New Progressive Alliance?
Yeah, I just got done coming through Wisconsin and Michigan talking to people about the NPA. And probably 80% of the people were younger people that I talked to, people under 30. And they seem to, you know, it's just like, you know, like this is what we want, they're saying. you know, they're saying, you know, where has this organization been? Well, there's a lot of people thinking along those lines. Where has there been somebody saying, you know, there has to be an end to this two-party trap? We got to break free. And, you know, a lot of people on the left are saying, well, we can't be involved in politics. We just got to demonstrate in the streets. Other people are saying, oh, we can't be demonstrating in the streets. We got to become involved in politics. Well, our position is that we need to look at being involved in the political arena, and we need to be involved in the streets, and that the two things, two methods of struggle, should complement each other and not be put at odds to each other. And I think people are more or less looking for, you know, an organization with this kind of outlook.
Mm-hmm.
So it's,
Now, some of the things when you think about students,
we're pretty unique.
Since Obama just got elected, and back to, you know, students in particular, we just see that they, on the student debt, you know, they have, you know, debt that is being created for students. They have now increased the interest rate that many of these students will have to pay. And now, in the long run, these students will be having to pay thousands and thousands of dollars to receive an education. Of course, right. Myself, you understand that I believe that education should be free. I believe it's a human right. But, you know, this is coming out of the Obama administration. Now that he's in for his second term, he's already secured that. Now it's basically going to war on the American people.
Yeah, well, I agree. Everything from child care on up through university and college education should all be free. You know, as I agree with Tony Benn, British politician, who says any country that can spend this kind of money on wars and militarism can come up with the funds to finance what people need and provide those kinds of services for free. And I think that there's a whole lot of people that agree with that position. We should have free child care. We should have free public education, a quality education, and we should have free university educations. One of the things that was brought up on our last, the first telephone conference call was brought up about the student loan problem, and everybody agreed that that should be one thing that we take a position on. So
right.
I think on the next telephone conference that will be a major point on the student loan business. What was brought up is that we should support Elizabeth Warren, but her position is real weak, and that should be rewritten and strengthened as far as the legislation she's proposing. And my personal opinion is that Elizabeth Warren is only proposing it as sort of a fluke-type thing to keep people drawn into the Democratic Party, and she's not really even serious about pushing her initiative because she knows that Obama and most Democrats won't even support it. After all, if you look at the majority of the Democrats in the Senate, they voted to cut food stamps, so it's not like they're going to probably support an initiative to cut student loan debt.
Right, exactly. Now, when it comes to the politics of the New Progressive Alliance, when I look at the politics, Alan, it appears to be a very left organization, which I can appreciate many of the positions. Is the New Progressive Alliance, is it a socialist organization as well?
No.
Like when I think I'm affiliated with the Socialist Party USA, you know, we're a socialist organization. I was a member of the Peace and Freedom Party for close to 15 years. It's a socialist organization. The New Progressive Alliance, is it a socialist organization? And what is your position on socialism?
Well, we don't really have a position on socialism. Our position is right now that we want to unite people around this basic 10-point program. And from there, we have a lot of people that are socialists, active with MPA, but we also have a lot of people that are what we call progressives and even some liberals. And I would guess not a whole lot of liberals, that it's mostly people that would define themselves as progressives and quite a few people that define themselves as socialists.
Alan, could I ask you, are there any people who define themselves as communists in it?
Well, I am.
Okay.
Well, you'd have to ask them. I know people that tell me that they're also communists, but I don't know. You know, I don't feel comfortable speaking for them. They'd have to speak for themselves. I know that here in Minnesota, Nicole Beaulieu and Curtis Bakanaga were involved in trying to put together a new political party mostly on the Indian reservations, and they called it Warriors for Justice. And, you know, they're involved in the New Progressive Alliance now. Both of them are on the steering committee. And so, you know, yeah. I would think that it's a pretty broad grouping of people. I don't think it's fair to try and pigeonhole people as socialists or progressives. I think it's just a good mix of people. We found that, you know, people define themselves, and one guy says he's a moderate Republican, but he agrees with, you know, everything that we're doing. And I think to some extent it shows that the Democrats and Republicans, I know I heard a guy the other day on one of the left forum panels, he said we don't have a liberal or a left and a right among the Democrats and Republicans. What we have is the right, the further right, and the extreme right. And I think that's a sort of a fair assessment of where the Democrats and Republicans are. And that doesn't include the majority of the American people. And the majority of the American people feel that they're left out right now and that they have no political home. And their political home, we're hoping, will be, you know, along progressive lines like we're advocating with the New Progressive Alliance. And there's a lot of people, if you look at our website, I think the Facebook page has like over 1,000 people now that have liked it. And if you look at the people that have liked it, you know, you'll find a full range of people from liberals and, like I say, mostly progressives, but quite a few socialists and even communists like myself. And, you know, one of the things that a lot of us have been talking about that we should be promoting is the activities that are taking place in North Carolina with the Moral Monday movement down there. And I think that that's a good initiative. And I think that most people would agree with that, that are involved in MPA. It's not like we take votes to see what people want. It's more like we put forward positions that we think that everybody can come around, agree to and come together around. And then if we start to have a lot of complaints about the position, then we start to discuss it more and we iron it out and come to an agreement. That's what happened with our Unified Progressive platform. We sent it out to literally thousands of people, and we had all kinds of input where people said this shouldn't be in there and that shouldn't be in there. So we would have discussions, and finally we would agree on, you know, what should be there. And that's how we arrived at that.
One other thing that Ruth Ann brought up was in the, were there, you know, various people that are communists, their position with the, as far as the NPA, the New Progressive Alliance. Are there any communists other than yourself that were running as candidates either in 2010 or 2012 that endorsed the platform, the Unified Progressive Platform of the NPA?
Well, the Communist Party itself is in a terrible situation, and they've only endorsed Obama
and
the Democrats.
I'm talking about individuals that are running as seeking public office.
Not that I know of.
Okay.
I haven't run myself. I haven't run for public office since the 80s. But, you know, I'm seriously considering running for office here in Minnesota. I've been talking about it and discussing with people for quite a few years now.
Well, you know, you will receive my endorsement.
Well, I appreciate that, because you had mine too, you know.
I know I did. I just want to I want to get into a few more things that in regards to, you know, like I said, I just like to mention to our listeners again, we have Alamak. He joins our program once every other week and come on with a lot of interesting he addressed a lot of interesting topics that we present and discuss those where our listeners can come in, ask their questions. And sometimes, you know, we have guests who will tune in with some very good questions, but always Alan has a lot of good information to share. And Alan, thanks for joining the program once again.
I appreciate the opportunity. Talking about communist organizations, I should mention that this this group that's coming together on Sunday that's been initiated, one of the initiators besides the Peace and Freedom Party has been the, I think they call it Party for Social, is it Party for Socialism and Liberation? Or Party for
PSL.
Liberation?
Yeah. Party for Socialism and Liberation, PSL.
Yeah, they have endorsed that. I don't know if they've been involved. I know some of their members have supported, you know, our unity statement and stuff as individuals, but I don't think that as an organization they do. But I'm not sure. But the organization is coming together.
They were very much behind the ANSWER Coalition, where they had many demonstrations throughout the country, and they just recently ran Peta Lindsay. She was their presidential candidate, which she eventually, here in California, she was running as the presidential candidate for the seeking the Peace and Freedom Party's nomination, and actually that she threw her support for Roseanne Barr for to run as a candidate on their national ticket. Alan,
yeah, and I never found Roseanne Barr particularly progressive, but
yeah, I you know, Roseanne Barr, she was sort of all over the place. She was Green Party, and then she didn't receive their nomination, and the next day she was with the Peace and Freedom Party. She was trying to decide whether she was socialist or a capitalist or a reformist. She didn't know what she was, and now that the election's over, I don't know. I think she went back to her macadamia farm in Hawaii. But we need to have some people that are really serious about. We have some serious issues out here, and we need to have serious candidates. We need to have a apparatus that's in place where we can even support those candidates. Because Alan, what we're looking at today, the left, they're running into many challenges here in this country. First of all, we have a media that is completely owned and managed by Wall Street. We have the corporate candidates that are owned and managed by Wall Street. And what do you see the New Progressive Alliance being? Where do you see the position of the organization in 2014 and 2016? Because, Alan, we have some I can't emphasize it enough. We have many serious issues on a state and national level, and we need to have a left that can be able to challenge the two-party system, even if they're challenging them with an agenda or having people that can represent them on a national forum to speak up against the crazy politics that's going on in Washington. But where do you see the New Progressive Alliance being prepared to be on the political scene or being of any political significance within the next 2 years, which is an election 2014 and also in 2016? Because the preparation begins now. You can't start preparing several months before an election.
Yeah, we've talked about that too, and we agree with that. I think that the New Progressive Alliance will continue to be a catalyst for people to discuss the need to break free from the two-party trap. And I would point out that I think that probably we were one of the most important groups as far as getting forward that there were alternatives to Obama in the last election. For instance, we got a lot of information out as a result of you and Rocky Anderson and Jill Stein all agreeing to support the Unified Progressive Platform. And, you know, there were a lot of people that never heard of all three of you. And because of our work, they at least heard that there was these alternatives. And so, you know, that alone, I think, was an important role that we played. And we'll probably continue to play that kind of role. And the more people that become involved in the organization to help us get that kind of information out, the better. I think that there's a lot of people now that are close with MPA. They're talking about the need to start organizing congressional committees that will actually begin to run candidates on the same platform that the MPA has. So that will be good. But, you know, discussion is all part of starting it. It's been a long time in this country since this country has actually had a progressive party involved in the electoral arena. I'm not just talking about left-wing organizations. The Socialist Party and the Communist Party have been around a long time, the Peace and Freedom Party. But as far as bringing together progressives, which would include liberals and leftists, into a working alliance of some sort. It's been, you know, since the late 40s where you had the Progressive Party itself headed up by Henry Wallace and, you know, to where there was actually any kind of real progressive political movement on a massive scale. I mean, Henry Wallace got over 4 million votes. That's nothing to sneer at a time when these people are all under severe government repression, you know. So I think that we've got a foundation to build on. And the former socialist governor of Minnesota, Elmer Benson, was very involved in Henry Wallace's Progressive Party campaign. So the Progressive Party, to a large extent, was building on the movement first initiated by the Minnesota Farmer Labor Party, which was a socialist party. And I think that now we got to look at both the Minnesota Farmer Labor Party, the Progressive Party, what the Socialist and Communist parties have done over the years, which is quite a bit towards keeping people alert to the need for a, you know, some kind of working class based progressive people's party. And that once people begin to talk about that we need this alternative, then it's going to become a reality. And because none of our groups are big enough to do it alone, it's a very expensive process to run a candidate on a national level. It's still real expensive even to run congressional candidates, and unless we can all come together some way to make this happen, it's not going to happen. And I think that's one of the roles that the MPA can play, is bring people together.
Like you mentioned, running national campaigns have become very expensive. Here in California, you had Meg Whitman. This was during the governor's race. She had put up she said her entry fee was $150 million. I think she spent somewhere around $156 million for that campaign to be governor. But we can see that's Wall Street money. Now the entry fee for running as a presidential as a candidate is almost a quarter of $1 billion. So if you don't have $250 million as far as your entry fee, you're not even really a serious candidate. So how do you deal with that? Organizations, they must be unified and come together in solidarity. They must do things together. And is that something that NPA is working toward, creating some type of unifying to help to unify third parties, or at least to bring together some type of communication where they can be able to work on one accord?
Yeah, we think that one of the main things where there's numerous third parties is to, you know, one of the things that we could do is be the facilitator of having forums that bring these parties together so people can hear what they have to say. And, you know, things like this on a congressional level and even on a national level, as we become a larger organization, we'll be able to do this on a national level. And that's very important because, if you know, out of sight is out of mind. If people don't know that there are other candidates in the race and that they have other views and opinions from those views of the Democrats and Republicans, people aren't going to give any consideration at all to the idea that, you know, we need a third party to challenge these Wall Street people for power. So, you know, that's more or less where we see our role, I think, is doing things like that. And it's just something that's got to be done. I don't think people realize, you know, how expensive it actually is. Let me give you an example, Stuart. I literally campaigned to get a resolution passed by the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party in support of single-payer universal health care. I traveled thousands of miles to all 87 counties in the state of Minnesota. This is just to get a resolution passed supporting it. I spent over $30,000 just on gas.
$30,000?
Yeah, and all of that money was raised just by going to little meetings of people in all the different precincts and talking to people and telling them what we wanted to do, and we wanted to get delegates involved so we could get this resolution passed. And at the end, you know, you make a little pitch for money, and they send you on, you get enough money together to send you on to the next community. And this is the way we raise those funds. And I think this is the way that, you know, any kind of people's organization has to see this, because we're not going to get the hundreds of millions of dollars that these other candidates get. What we got to concentrate on is that we get people that are activists and willing to commit to do the work. And then, you know, you build these little committees and get people of concerned people together. And those people, once they hear what you have to say, they will know that it's worth investing their money in helping to build this kind of movement. So,
but,
you know, it,
things,
it was no small
thing
to get this resolution passed through the Minnesota Democratic Farmer Labor Party. But, you gotta, you know, when people say you can make change to the Democratic Party, it took us 6 years to get a resolution passed that was actively working. And, you know, if it takes that long for a resolution, just imagine how long it would take to get legislation passed. We've been waiting for that legislation since, you know, Humphrey promised it back in 1945 or 1946, and we've never had it.
Gentlemen, you took somebody's name, not in vain, but he's here to talk to you. Here's Bob.
Oh, Bob.
Hey, Alan and Stuart. I sorry
hey,
to interrupt.
Bob.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, we like Bob.
Hey, I had a quick comment or a quick question, and then I'm going to hang right up. But I've been following the program, and I want to ask Alan and Stuart, is there really a chance for the elections to work anymore? I mean, or is the system so corrupt and so bad that there's just no – I mean, and if it is, then what is the purpose of NPA and Socialist Party and all that? I mean, is it an organizing tool or
good
what?
Very question.
And, hey, thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Alan, please.
Well, in my opinion, we have to be involved – the political process is very corrupt. It's very controlled and manipulated. But I don't think it's right if we say that we don't participate in the electoral process in this country, for the simple reason that it means that we're no longer defending democracy at all. And I think it's very important that Wall Street be challenged on every front, whether it's in the streets or at the ballot box or in the places of employment. It's got to be Wall Street has to be challenged in all three of those places in order for us to actually come out winners over Wall Street eventually. And, you know, that's my position. The elections give us an opportunity to talk about a lot of different issues. We know that in different areas that it is going to be possible for people to run on third party tickets and win. It's a matter of building the organizations. And so, you know, Wall Street doesn't always determine who's going to win and who's going to lose in the electoral arena, especially if the people get organized. The mining companies and the bankers were very organized against the Minnesota Farmer Labor Party, and yet they persevered for in over a 20-year period, and they finally won. They won the governorship here in Minnesota. They took over the House and almost took over the Senate. They dominated practically every county commission and city council in the state of Minnesota, along with the park commissions. And so, you know, it can be done, and we can do it again. It's just going to take a lot of work, and people got to understand it's going to take a you know, big, powerful organization of people working together to do that.
Well, you know, answering Bob's question, I don't think it's too late. But the other question I would have for myself, are we prepared? I would have to say no, we're not prepared. We should already have organizations on the left should already have the candidates lined up for 2014. They should already have the presidential and vice presidential contest beginning right now. Let's face it, for 2016, the Democrats and Republicans, they were already on top of that 5, 6, 7 years ago. I remember back in 2010, when I had announced that I was going to run as a presidential candidate, I took advantage of the time that I had before the election where I could seize the opportunity. It wasn't even 2 weeks after I had announced that I was going to run as a presidential candidate, I had Fox News contacting me. They wanted to have me to come on and talk about some of the issues that were going on at that time in regards to the Middle East, issues that were going on with the war, unemployment. They were contacting me every 3 to 4 weeks. Would you come on and we'll have someone to bring you down to our studios in San Diego, in Los Angeles? This is free publicity that the left can get. But the thing is, we can't wait until the last minute to say, all right, here are our candidates only 7 or 8 months before an election, when the Democrats and the Republicans have already started doing this 6 and 7 years ahead of the election. And they have billions of dollars between the corporate media and their campaign collections that they make, billions of dollars that they can spend on these campaigns. So we're not ready. We're not ready for 2014, and we're not ready for 2016. But the emphasis, I would say, is that we need to become more prepared. Alan?
Well, I agree with that too, Stuart. Let's face reality. Hillary Clinton's been preparing this for, 14, 16 years to run for the presidency.
Exactly.
And these people, you know, they're constantly out on the road. They're constantly speaking to big groups and small groups. All these,
they're already fundraising.
Yeah, people don't realize this, but all these big politicians, they never pass up an opportunity to go to a small community and even talk to two or three people.
Exactly.
And, you know, this is what we've got to be doing. And we've got to be doing it constantly and consistently and in a very persistent manner. If people say, well, I can get a couple people together in my living room or around the kitchen table, then we should have people that are willing and able to go there. And, you know, at those meetings, you explain to people that it takes a certain amount of money to do all this, and you make a pitch for funds, and you ask, get people signed up and ask them what they're willing and able to do. And you keep building like this. And it's like a you know, like we're all little raindrops or little snowflakes. Well, one little raindrop doesn't amount to much, but let it pour, you know.
Right, or, exactly.
You know, an old friend of mine, Phil Raymond, who built the United Automobile Workers, one of the keys in building the United Automobile Workers, if it was summer, he would use this analogy of a little raindrop. If it was winter, he'd use the analogy of a snowflake. And he'd say to people, you know, we're all like one little snowflake, but if there's a Michigan blizzard, let these politicians try and shovel us all away, you know, and this is, I think this is the way we got to look at it.
Well, Alan, I want you to give your contact information. We have around another 45 seconds. We appreciate you coming on again today. Contact information where people can be able to join in on that phone conference is coming up in a few days on Sunday. But, Alan, how can people reach you?
Okay, then call me at my home telephone, 218-386-2432, or they can Google my name on the internet, Alan Mackey, A-L-A-N-M-A-K-I, and they'll find my Podunk blog. Oh, by the way, Stuart, you put Podunk blog instead of Podunk blog on the mailing you set out.
Oh, well, I'll make certain. yeah.
That was probably me.
Again, I'd like to thank Ruth Ann for sponsoring and supporting this program. Alan, again, thanks for coming on and joining us once again. We look forward to having you back on. Thanks for all the useful information, and we look forward to having our listeners join the Socialist Insight once again next week. Thanks again. Have a good night, everyone.
Okay, night.
You're listening to Aramarte Feo on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Welcome to the Research Rabbit Hole Radio Show with Cynthia Hamill. Tonight we have special guest Debbie Newhook on the show to explain more about her background as a targeted individual and to give information on how to heal the body from the chemtrail and nanoparticle overload that is happening due to chemtrailing. Welcome to the show, Debbie. Please give us some information on your background.
Oh, thanks, Cynthia, for having me on the show. Okay. I can time date my stalking and harassment back just over 20 years, about 1993, when I lived in another province in Canada called Alberta, and I lived in a city called Edmonton. So I was in the helping field back then. I worked both in corrections, and I also worked in the child welfare department. Kind of, we did contract, the company I worked for, we did contract work for child welfare, early intervention. Is basically what I was for them. And the other one, I was actually like a guard at a halfway house, a guard slash counselor slash drug counselor at the halfway house for federal parolees. So my education is in corrections, actually, but there was lots of work back then, and I wasn't working full time at one job, so I got that was two part time jobs I had. So that's what I was doing. But then I picked up a case through a company called Humanicare, which was the company that did early intervention for children in need. So a referral came in, and it was just to take care of a little girl for about a week. Well, exactly 1 week. It was I heard that it was paying quite well, and I was in late that day, and it had gone through 15 staff workers that refused it, turned it down, and so they just threw it at me when I came in the door. Hey, there's a job that came through. Do you want it? So I looked into it, and I said, sure. But I had to be an independent, so I had to go out and get my own insurance, and I was contracted straight through the government, not through the Office of Humanicare. I think right now they wanted nothing to do with it. So I went straight through the government, and I had to purchase my insurance, and then I started a few weeks later after they did a criminal record check and all that. Anyways, from the first time I took on the case, even signed the contract, then I started seeing stalkers in the community right away. And I'm just like, and then strange stuff started happening, break-ins in my house. So I did the respite care, or respite care as many people call it, and that's when I actually, when I was at her home, the little girl's home, I went right into their home and stayed there with the rest of the family as well. The mom and the dad were gone away. Now, these were foster parents, but they were going to adopt her. They were just waiting for all the papers to come in. And good family. But anyways, I was there with the other children who were all older, and they really didn't require babysitting, so to speak. But I was just there to be a counselor on hand and a glorified nanny with lots of education. So it was during that time that I actually saw very aggressive drivers around me. I didn't clue in that I was being stalked until I clued in 10 years ago that this was going down for me, and then I connected all the dots back to at least 20 years ago that this all started. So I bolted from there because it escalated. I did the term of respite care, and then I got a call from this the Child Welfare Department again, and they wanted me to take on the case again. But just before they called, we're talking, you know, 48 hours, then a whole bunch of stuff was going down for me that I couldn't believe. My ex suddenly appeared in the city, and then he's semi-bothering me, I mean, and kind of harassing me, but nothing any really extreme. But anyways, then and lo and behold, I get a call from Child Welfare again, only this time it was a complaint against me.
Oh, dear.
That I was neglecting my children. So that's what the complaint was. So top that all off with my ex-husband coming back into town, the stalking I was seeing. I thought he hired people to do this to me, because that's when they really amped up, just before the phone call from the Child Welfare Department to take the case on again. But as it turned out, I spoke to the counselor and I turned it down. I said that all this stuff is happening in my life. I don't know what's going on. And she actually said, yep, you better leave town. So I did. I bolted. And I'm now in Nanaimo, and I came here because I had family here. So I wanted the family support and somewhere to stay when I came. So I've been here ever since and settled down in here. But it took a few years still before I seen this stuff going on. And they actually had to run me off the road 3 times before I clued in that something was very wrong in my life.
Wow. Now, were you also receiving what other people that we've interviewed have received, which was the electronic remote neural monitoring and the harassment, electronic harassment?
Yes. However, I didn't know that back then. I do know that's what was happening to my body, because I started getting sick before I left Edmonton, which is really unusual. In my 30s, I was in fit, top shape. I was an athlete, as well as a single mom and working hard in the community. So I was really fit, and I couldn't figure out what was going on with my body. I was suddenly having these horrible pains, especially in my feet, and I was a racquetball player, and so I needed my feet. And then my back was aching, and then I got fibromyalgia pain. Well, it turned out that fibromyalgia, it never got diagnosed until a couple of years after that by some doctor who just kind of threw a label at me, because I came with them with a list a mile long of my symptoms, which were huge. And yes, and when I go look now on all the symptoms of being on the receiving end of directed energy weapons, I've had all of them.
Which,
yeah, and I was in so much pain that I was, this is what I said to myself, I was waiting until my children graduate high school, and I'll move them out of the house, and I'll shoot myself, because the pain was so severe. Well, guess what? I beat it. Now, here's another little bit of a conspiracy. I got some friends kept talking to me about this Herbalife product, which is a U.S.-based company. And this was quite a number of years ago. We're talking at least 15 years ago that I was doing Herbalife. So I started doing Herbalife, and within about 6 weeks, my energy was back, and some of the fibromyalgia pain was gone.
Wow.
Not all of it. And the brain fog was lifting. Now, I was on no medication because I refused. I just suffered the pain, and all he wanted to really give me was antidepressants anyway. But anyways, I don't deal with doctors any longer because they really don't know how to treat this. But anyway, so I've self-healed already once, but I'm telling you, I did not know I was being hit with directed energy weapons, nor did I know that the nanoparticulates from all the chemtrails were totally saturated in my body, and those were the receivers of all this directed energy attacks. Anyways, I managed to beat it by doing this program, and within 6 months I was back on the racquetball court, and I had put on a little bit of weight too, so I'd lost all the weight, was on the racquetball court. I was about 48, I think, or 49, or maybe I was 50. It put me in the 50 mark. But anyways, I went and played in the Nationals when I was 50 years old.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's how
good
I felt after I detoxed from and by taking this product called Herbalife. But interesting enough, the president of the Herbalife company, when I was still in it, and I decided to sell it because my health turnaround was absolutely remarkable, nothing short of miraculous, actually. So he suddenly dies. He's 36 years old.
Whoa. Wow.
And this is what they tell us. They told the press everything. Here's this man. He's so fit. He's so healthy. He is knock-dead gorgeous, 36 years old, owns companies, multimillionaire. He just married a new wife 2 weeks before he died. And it was, according to the news, his doctor gave him one pill to combat jet lag because he was traveling a lot. And he died.
Wow, that's a wild story.
And after that, the product changed. It was never the same.
Wow, so they changed all the ingredients then probably.
Whatever they, I think, because you know what? I wasn't the only one that had absolutely miraculous healing on Herbalife. But it's not the same as it was before. Not
wow.
When I was taking it. So anyways, I do stay on Herbalife for a little while, but then I eventually get off of it, and I seem to be okay. But then I had about 5 years of really good health. Nothing wrong with me. I was back playing racquetball. I was on the courts. I was playing with the old farts that I used to play with a long time ago when I used to live in this area. And so, yeah, got my life back. But then it started again. And still, when I did the research and found out this was a real crime, I didn't understand the directed energy weapons, and I didn't think it was happening to me because by that time I'm 50, and I'm just thinking it's a little bit of age. Some of the pain coming back. Now, I have never gotten as sick as I was with that fibromyalgia for those 8 years. That was 8 years until I got my health back.
Yeah, now the people that I have interviewed on the directed energy weapons attack, when they're actually hit with a laser type thing, they're actually feeling an electronic stimulus and like an electronic shock. So you don't just guesstimate that this is something that's happening to you. You know without a doubt you're being targeted and that they're actually hitting certain areas of your body. So was that the result that you felt?
No,
or was it
when I was feeling this, I did feel a jumping in my body, which I thought, kind of thought, oh my God, I'm getting MS. as well as fibromyalgia. Well, that has continued. That is either perpetrator stimulating the nanotech in my body in that area, or the nanotech itself is jumping, and I call it nanotech. It's basically is Morgellons is what it is. So I'm kind of jumping because I know now that all my sickness was related to. And now I could have been poisoned with this stuff because I was poisoned at one time in my life when I lived in this area, but more out in the country. And I
was that from pesticides or?
No, I was poisoned. My food was poisoned in my house, and I believe they poisoned me with parasites because not long after, actually, that's when I started really paying attention to my health and got rid of the medical system totally. And the very first thing I got on, people just kept talking to me about coconut oil. Now this is 10 years ago, coconut oil. So yeah, I kind of suspected I had parasites, and interesting enough, the poison food that I ate, I immediately puked it back up, but it was too late. I mean, they were already in there, and that poison food came out of my fridge. How it happened, I don't know, because it was okay 8 hours ago, the night before I cooked it. So it was already cold cooked in my fridge.
Wow. Now, I remember you mentioning that you've got some type of detox that you're doing for the nanoparticles. Yeah, can you kind of go into that? Because there's a lot of people dealing with that globally. We do have a good following on the chemtrail boards and stuff on Facebook. And, you know, sometimes a lot of people, like there's 7,000 people in some of our chemtrail groups now that are all following, you know, how do we combat this? What can we do? How can we be healthier? How can we survive even though they're spraying us every day? That whole thing. So
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what they do to targeted individuals, actually, I might mention, they do want to do it to everybody, but they've been experimenting on us. Okay, so now this is what it was. I kind of suspected I had nanotechnology because I was actually literally one day chased an infection around my head. Literally. And that scared the bejesus right out of me. But anyways, it sent me to a naturopath, and he confirmed. He saw these little nanoparticulates in my eyes and got me on a detox. Now, what he got me on in the beginning, it works. But I have to admit right now I'm not taking it, partially because I keep forgetting to take it, and I almost think that's mind control. And secondly, I really wanted to try some other things because when I talked about this product that I did for the first 2 months online and how it was detoxing me and pulling out all the same stuff that the Morgellons folks have got pictures of on the internet, all exactly the same stuff, I started talking about it and I was jumped on right, left, and center. This product is called MMS and it's not to be confused with MSM, which is a supplement. This is not a supplement. It is sodium chloride. Anyways, it's basically the government can't say too much about it because it's what they put in our water to purify it.
Oh, okay.
Okay, but there's a chemical reaction that happens to the MMS when you activate it with lemon juice. So you literally only have to take drops of these. And this is during my first 2 months of detox. That's when I actually understood the mind control. I understood the voice to skull because I never get it. They never really did that to me. I might have got some subliminal messaging because I've kind of figured out the subliminal messaging during detox. It just like it was a huge learning curve for me because I didn't get it when the other, you know, I would network with targets and they would talk about the voice of skull. Well, I didn't get it. I didn't understand it. I didn't experience
that,
it.
That's another one of those things. If you're not truly targeted with the electronic remote harassment and neural remote monitoring, you won't understand that aspect of it, because the second that it hits you, the minute that you receive that voice to skull within your own head, you know without a doubt what they're talking about. And, you know, that technology has been around since 1958 when Freud, you know,
yeah.
patented it. And so they've had now, you know, dozens of decades to perfect this and to really, you know, make it what it is today, which is like the voice of God command coming right through your head, like a radio receiver inside your head.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
It was the mind control I started to experience, and it's all personal because they do know us like they know probably even better than themselves. They have profiled us. So they know us, and so like all the mind control I was getting was very specific, except every once in a while something really odd would come in. That I knew that it was voice to skull, and it was definitely not my thoughts. Sometimes I would actually hear that it was a woman's voice as well. Okay, so this is the first time in my life I'm really experiencing this. I think I'm hooked up remote neurally, and they can see through my eyes because of many other things that confirm that for me that have happened to me in the community, but they never did talk to me. They never did harass me with voices. I always think I was just monitored and physically tortured. They definitely did that.
Okay.
But anyways, okay, so back to the MMS. MMS, if you just research those three letters, what that means is Miracle Mineral Solution. Okay, they've been working with people who have malaria. In fact, that's when they discovered that this was pretty powerful killer of pathogens. Jim Humble is the fellow who markets it, and he just sells to people very cheap. In fact, they were trying to get me to make it too. It's a chemical that's made. It's nothing natural. I have to tell you that it's nothing natural, and that's one of the reasons why many people came right down hard on me when I tried to promote it on the internet and on Facebook. It was just like constant. In fact, I found out there was conversations behind my back as they were trying to get me off groups so I wouldn't freaking talk about it anymore. So anyways, MMS, they're in the autistic children's, and they're working with the moms of autistic children. Now, I was on their group, and only because of the MMS, I was still interested in taking it, and I was watching them. And I was listening to what the moms were doing, and I was doing the same thing. I did enemas with this MMS. You wouldn't believe what I did to my body to get this stuff out of me. So I'm bathing in the MMS, and that takes about 25 to 35 drops of activated MMS, and you sit and you soak in it, and it pulled all this stuff out that showed me that I was having the same fibers, crystals, and some kind of biofilm coming out of my body that all the Morgellons people were talking about. But I have no source, no lesions, no nothing. Okay, so I'm doing the enemas with the MMS, and I'm shocked at what's coming out of my body. Fungus is coming out of my body. This biofilm is coming out of my body. And, of course, then I've got filaments coming out of my body, and I think I have regular garden parasites, regular human parasites coming out of my body. I'm shocked. And then I'm listening to the moms of the autistic children reading their Facebook page for taking MMS, and they're talking about the same stuff that came out of me.
Whoa, okay.
It's coming out of their children.
Okay.
They're giving their children enemas with MMS. So they're talking fungus, biofilm. They call them parasites. They do call them parasites. But they're getting all the flex, the fibers, but they're just thinking it's all parasites.
So they're not realizing it's nanoparticles then.
Well, as soon as I started mentioning Morgellons, I was booted right off there. There's gatekeepers.
Oh, okay, yes. Okay, that's
what we talked about in
our preliminary interview. Okay.
Yeah, I did start to talk to them, and you know, I got enough comments right away from some of the moms that I knew they were interested because they already knew it was parasites. That was part of the problem with their autistic children.
Whoa, okay.
Okay, so now MMS is treating malaria, autistic children. I know it helps us targeted individuals with the more gallons, but nobody will listen to me because it really was slammed. Apparently, there's a story out there where a woman died. Now, whether that's a true story or not, I don't know.
Okay, she died, you mean like taking the MMS supplement?
That's right, that's right. She took, according to what the report was, she OD'd on it. She took too much.
Okay, and that is a reality because a lot of people don't realize the limitations when they're taking an herb or supplement or something that is not as strictly monitored as a prescription drug. But you know, a good thing can be a bad thing if people do too much of it. So
that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So, anyways, I encourage people to do the research. Look up Jim Humble and the work he's done, and find them on Facebook. They are on Facebook as well. In fact, there's a number of people. It's very easy to make, and it was actually my naturopath that makes the MMS. And then I was talking to the partner of Jim Humble down in South America closely because she knew she had been trying to tell the targeted individuals that what they had in their body was more gallons. And that was how they were tracking us, torturing us, remote neuromonitoring us, because we are totally saturated with nanoparticulates. So she was trying to tell us years ago, but we weren't listening.
Okay,
and she sells the MMS, so she was really interested, and I talked to her almost every day on the internet and give her updates on what was coming out of my body, and so they were very interested. But when I tried to promote it, which was my idea of getting out there and doing some activism, is get people to realize they can detox this stuff out of their body to at least regain some, definitely regain your health and regain some control and take the controls away from the handlers, the perpetrators, the government agents, whatever it is we want to call them. Okay, so I'm faithful for 2 months, but then the bath for some reason was not drawing the stuff out of my skin, and I could still feel it in my skin, movement in my skin, and so I had to find something else. So when I started looking to have a different bath, I researched radiation detox bath. So this
okay,
is what I
came. Before we move on to another one, let me go ahead and make sure that I'm spelling this guy's name right. Is it Jim Humble, H-U-M-B-L-E, or is he spelling
right.
it
just,
some other way?
Just like the word being humble.
Okay, yeah, we're running this kind of like a research show where I try to give people leads and information and links as much as I can, or websites, in order to find the exact thing that we're talking about. Is there a website where people can find this MMS?
Well, I just suggest that you go through, just key in the words Jim Humble. It will come
okay.
up, because that's all. And he's out of South America, and that's
okay.
where he treats a lot of malaria people. But he does courses all over the world. Now, MMS is the cheapest way I know to detox. But you've got to change your diet. So change diet, do MMS.
Okay, and what would people change their diet to exactly, Debbie?
Well, you need to go organic and grow your own if you can, or support your local farmers, because then you know that don't use any kind of commercial herbicides, pesticides. You know, everything's, you know, that it's organic and it's coming from an organic farm. I'm not even entirely sure that everything is organic in the store, because I discovered that there's a lot of nanotech and biofilm in the food that we purchased from the store, and it was an accidental thing. Last summer, I was having a dinner party, so I'm peeling potatoes, dropped them in salted water. Now, I use Himalayan salt, and I just let them soak for 2 hours as I was busy doing other stuff. And so I come back in 2 hours, and then by this time, I've already been on my detox for about 6 months, 8 months, or something like that. Anyways, I look, and I go, oh, my God, that is the same biofilm that's floating on top of my bath with little tiny flecks that you can see with an LED flashlight. Like, I watched and paid attention to everything that was coming out of my body. So when I sat in the MMS baths, like, use no soap, so there's no oil, no nothing, and then that's all I would soak in, MMS and water. So the stuff would start coming up to the surface, and I could see it. It was a biofilm. It's like an iridescent film. It's kind of whitish clear. It's hard to detect, but you can see it with an LED flashlight so easily. It's very reflective.
Oh, okay.
So that's what I was seeing on top of my potatoes, and I'm going, oh my God. And I believe I had started doing salt detox baths by that time. Because as I mentioned, the MMS wasn't pulling stuff out of my skin. I don't know. I think what was happening because of the remote neural monitoring and also these nanotech are in tune to your body. So when they knew I was going to have a bath, they ran deep to avoid the MMS. Is all I can say, because it was working internally, but it wasn't working externally. So that set me looking for other stuff. So my bath now, before I run out of time, my bath now, what I use, and I'll explain why I use it, is 1 cup of Himalayan salt, and it's because it's got 84 trace minerals. And for some reason, we're lacking minerals, and I think it's something is replaced in one of the heavy metals that they are dropping on us from the chemtrails are in there, and we have to detox them out and replace them with the trace minerals that were missing. So the Himalayan salt, 1 cup of Epsom salt, and that's magnesium. We need that as well. And then the borax. Now, the borax is pretty popular amongst some of the Morgellons people. A number of years ago, they were saying that it actually helped. Some people will drink an eighth of a teaspoon a day in water of borax, and they say it helps to detox the nanotech, or you do it over a course of a time, and they've suggested that it
So they're actually drinking that? Is that what I heard?
Yes. Well, I did try it, and you know what? I didn't like it. It was like soapy water. I'm not drinking it. But it delivers boron in your skin, and here's another good thing that you need about the borax. It immediately ups the pH of the water, so thus, when you're sitting in it, it ups the pH of your body, and that's important. We have to get the pH up and stabilized at normal, about 7, so that we can heal. We can't heal if it's down acid, so what they're dumping on it is a lot of, it makes the air and water and the ground acidic, our body's acidic, so we got to get it up. So it's up to us to do that. So there's pH boosters you can purchase. Here's an easy way to up your pH. You just take 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar, drop in a 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda, top it up with a little bit of water, and knock it back while it's still fizzing. It's really good. Or wait till it stops fizzing and knock it back. That almost immediately, and I did test it because I paid attention to my body pH, and I had pH test strips because I knew that I had to be in my body had to be the right pH to heal and work on pushing and detoxing this stuff out. So within about 45 minutes of taking 2 tablespoons of the vinegar and baking soda and water, it ups your pH by about half a mark. So if you need to still get it up, you just keep drinking it. And I used to drink it about 3 times a day.
Okay. So, Debbie, can you repeat that slower for me? I'm a Texan, so I'm translating that and trying to write it down. So can you state it a little bit slower where everybody can write that down? So it's 2 tablespoons of vinegar, is that right? And then
apple cider vinegar.
Okay.
And 1/4 of a teaspoon of baking soda. Drop it in. It's going to fizz. And about 1/4 of a cup of water. Add it to that. And then just drink it.
Oh, okay. Very good. Okay, that helps to just slow it down and say it in a way where everybody understands what we're talking about. So it's 2 tablespoons apple cider vinegar, 1/4 of a tablespoon of baking soda, and then
1/4 of a teaspoon.
1/4 of a teaspoon, okay, of baking soda, and then 1/4 of a cup of water.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
You should try and drink that about 3 times a day because of our environment. Or even I tested my city water and it's way too acid. It should be coming out of the taps at 7, but it wasn't.
I have a question.
We got a question from Ruth Ann.
Right,
sure.
Because we're giving 1 cup Himalayan salt, 1 cup Epsom salt, and how much borax?
1 cup. Sorry, 1 cup of all 3 of those.
Okay, and that's for a bath.
That's for a bath. I soak for an hour. I scrub. I don't use any more commercial soap. There's nothing commercial in my bathroom anymore. I buy artisan made soaps or anything that's 100% natural, but I have found that the activated bamboo charcoal soap is awesome for pulling this stuff out of your skin. Now, ideally in the bath, what you need to do is you want the bath as hot as possible when you step in. Scrub down and soak, and just no soap. And make sure you get, you know, if your bathtub's not deep enough, and mine's not, I had to do the rotation. I had to roll over and get my make sure I got the front part of my stomach and my face. I get my face right underneath the water. I get my head under the water, my ears, you know, just my nose hanging, and I rotate. So I'm especially in the beginning, I was in the bath for an hour and a half, and then you let the water cool down, and they do even suggest that even a quick rinse off with cold water at the end. But when I felt I was ready to get out of the bathtub, that's when I would scrub down with a really brisk scrub brush. If you scrub before you get in the bathtub too, it also helps to loosen up, and all the surface stuff will come off almost right away, and it opens up the skin for it to receive all the salt. And these things do not like salt. So that's, as I discovered with the vegetables as well, you know, I when I saw my potatoes like that, I went to the store and I bought organic and regular vegetables, and I brought them home and I soaked them separately in salt water for 2 hours like I had done to my potatoes, and they all had biofilm and nanoflex coming out of them.
Wow.
Everything. So then, of course, I test
a disclaimer here for the vinegar, the baking soda, and the water. 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda 3 times a day will be way over what people who have high blood pressure should be taking in. So that's something, if you know, because we don't want that either. So really check your box. It's, I think, 1/8 of a teaspoon has 1,200 milligrams. So that's something to really keep in mind. Just wanted to throw that in.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we should put in a disclaimer and say that people should do their own research.
Yes.
And if they've got any outstanding health problems or issues that they already are aware of, to double-check this with their doctor before trying. But I don't want to hurt somebody, but I also feel like if someone has some information that could possibly help with this, there are, you know, dozens of people that are trying to find some way to resolve this in a healthy manner without having to, you know, take on a huge medical, you know, crisis type situation.
Right.
We're needing to heal at home as much as possible. But I appreciate Debbie's insights and Ruth Ann's insights. I think we need to have some balance here with the whole thing, you know?
Well, what Debbie said is so true about the organic thing, but growing your own and not using packaged processed foods. Because
well,
going to
we
be
there's a few of us who have been detoxing enough, and now I'm doing you know, lots more natural stuff. I'm trying to include in my diet. This is what I figured. Okay, I'm a targeted individual. One, they're aiming weapons at me, so I'm being irradiated. Okay, so I need a radiation detox. Plus, not to forget about Fukushima. Okay, so because they're not exactly telling us the truth about Fukushima, they keep upping the safety standards, you know, so that, oh, no, it's up here, but that's still okay. Well, no radiation is okay. So I searched the Internet, and this is what I recommend that everybody do. Search the Internet, find a diet that you would like, or eat the foods that they suggest that detoxes radiation. Some that I can think of offhand is rosemary and cucumbers. I just can't think of any right now when I'm really feeling like I need more radiation. I just am more in tune with my body, and I need more radiation detox. I just go on the Internet and look it up. Okay, what do I need to eat? Or I listen to my cravings. Now, that's interesting. I get some odd food cravings. Like sometimes it's asparagus. So and then it's like, okay, my kidney and my all that area needs some good cleaning out. So it's like I eat copious amounts of asparagus, and then I stop eating it. So I listen to my body. So the other thing I looked at, okay, now I got to detox heavy metals. So now I looked on the internet and found all the foods that detox heavy metals. Well, I can't eat them all. Oh my God, I'd be. I just can't seem to get them all into my body. So some things I take in tablet or supplement form. For example, heavy metal is cilantro. Well, my cilantro is not ready in my garden, so I went out and purchased cilantro tincture. Plus, there's other foods that detox heavy metals. I'm pulling a break. I didn't write them down. And then the next thing is parasites, okay, big-time parasite. So I focus a lot on parasites because I have found that when I am diligent, and I kind of experimented with myself right from the get-go, I tried to detox without changing my diet. Okay, I detoxed a little bit. Then I changed my diet only a little bit, and I detoxed a little bit better. But then it wasn't until I actually made a radical change in my diet did it make a profound difference. So it's all about the food. And we do believe, some of us who have detoxed, and we go back to the GMO foods, we suddenly see, in because we are detoxing with food and supplements, we are seeing in our urine this biofilm. Well, when we eat more of the food, we see more biofilm coming out of us. So there's a connection. So that's why that's how we sort of came up with the connection. And so we have to get off the GMO foods if we're going to heal from this and try and get it moving out of our body. So I did experiment and try eating sort of so-called normal, New World Order food, government-approved food, but it doesn't work.
Okay, so basically it's organic vegetables, then. That's kind of what you've arrived at.
And once I got off the meat, now getting off the meat was only 4 weeks ago, but it was amazing how much less severe everything was. There's a lot of nanoparticulates in the meat. I even tested the meat. Here's a way that you can try and clean your meat out and clean some of the nanotech out is to soak it in salt water or soak it in vinegar. Either one will draw some of this stuff out and then just wash it really well. So if you're not interested in getting off the meat, or buy organic, ethically raised meat, I would even test that and see if it pulled any of this nano garbage out of the meat. Now, there were certain things that were just seemed to make me feel worse. Chicken was very, very bad.
And they're loading, I believe, chicken with cyanide because it colors the meat where it can be sold easier in the grocery store. So that's laced with some type of red, dye. So I believe it's linked with cyanide.
Yeah, well, And interesting, when I'd go on a really good detox and really be very, very good for like about 2 weeks, so guess what? The first thing I'm starting to crave is chicken. These things in our body actually will mind control the host. So I've done a lot of research on parasites. Parasites in general do mind control the host, and in particular with our diet. So they will cause us to have really lousy cravings, especially cravings for anything that's sugary, which is GM, genetically modified, the sugar beet. And in particular, the bad meat that I would be chicken, and it would be something that was already made by somebody else, and that was the kind of cravings I was having, and I really had to fight hard. And of course, I'd give in. I'm human. But I learned that it is a lot to do with the diet and attitude as well. Even that, now there's a gal that's a chemtrail Morgellons activist. I believe she's out of Australia. Now she mentioned this, and I only heard her show tape, so I couldn't call in and just say bravo, thank you for saying that. But she mentioned that she thought the nanoparticulates or the Morgellons was programmed for negativity. Well, I go, yay, I thought that and thought that and thought that. I do a lot of deep thinking about this, and I'm going, yes, that it is. And I could actually see, because I have a cleaning business now, I'm blacklisted from the helping field, but I have a cleaning business. So I actually see this stuff everywhere. And when I was blue and mad and angry at the world, I can recall dust just flying at me. When I was so focused on what was going on with me in the community, all the stalking, I saw dust just flying at me, flying up my nose, everything. I'm just going, what the heck is going on? Well, I totally agree with her. So she said it first. I had thought it. And she said it publicly on the radio, and I'm going, that's it. That's part of it. It's part of the gang stalking, too. It's part of the harassment protocol. And then thus, negativity attracts negativity. So suddenly we have negative people everywhere around
us. Remember
that
movie that came out called Sphere? I think it had like Sharon Stone in it and this group that went on this underseas voyage or like maybe like an outer space voyage, and all of their each character had specific fears of, you know, the thing that would drive them absolutely bananas or would be absolutely horrifying for each one of those characters. And so help me, the screenplay played out and the movie and everything, and each one of those characters were taken out with the very thing that they hated the most. So it was almost like instant karma. Whatever they feared the most, they were projecting outwards, and it was literally attacking them right as things were happening. So I think that movie was really descriptive and
a lot
showed
of Hollywood.
Basically what's going on with this targeting.
Yeah, and I just remembered the woman's name, so I want to give her credit for saying that because I didn't say it first. It's Carolyn Carter,
if you know
of her. Okay.
Okay.
I believe she's in Australia or New Zealand because she's got kind of that accent. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting where she's from. But she is definitely a Morgellon speaker, and she talks about that. And I believe she's had a lot of healing breaks as well, but we all seem to still have it in our body. Now, here's the interesting part. I talked to my naturopath. That's who I suggest people go through because I don't think we're getting the help from the mainstream medical. Because I network with the Morgellons folks, and I listen and I watch the people with the doctors. I'm not sure that they know how to treat this. Whereas if you find an awake naturopathic doctor or even a practitioner, they may be able to get you on a good detox plan. Plus, so anyways, I spoke a lot to my naturopath. My first question to him, I said to him, do you know about the chemtrails? Before, I was only 30 seconds, I sat down in his chair. And as soon as he said yes, then I realized I was in the right place. Because I already suspected I was contaminated, as I said, with nanoparticulates. And so he did his diagnostic and confirmed, but I've since spoke to him a lot. I go and buy products from him. And I asked him about other people in the city. Do you treat other people? And he goes, yes. He says, I don't tell him what it is because, he fears for his business. And he says, and they already think he's kind of out there anyways, because he's an out-of-the-box thinker. So he doesn't tell them what he's treating them for, but he says most of his clients are all being treated for Morgellons with no lesions.
Oh, that's awesome. So he's just
and I live in a city that's only 80,000 people on the west coast of Canada on an island just across from Vancouver. If anybody knows where Vancouver, BC is, we're just like 24 miles of ocean from Vancouver, and that's where I live. So I have population 80,000, and most of his clients have all got Morgellons. Some of them have actually got the fibers coming out of them, and they're rejecting it. So there seems to be two types of people. Those that are rejecting it, which it got named Morgellons, and that's the Morgellons community, and those who are not rejecting it and have fully assimilated it into their body. Or they may be rejecting it in other areas that we haven't quite figured out, because it certainly does cause a lot of internal ailments. In particular, the fibromyalgia, the aching joints. Here's another one. Joint slippage seems to be part of the problem. And I look at my dog and my cat, who both have it. My dog has since passed away. I actually believe that they did something to my dog. I found her dead in my backyard. I was trying to treat her as well. And it was actually her, my dog, that clued me into salt as a cure, because she had some kind of skin ailment. This is before I connected the dots. And I would take her down to the ocean, and when I took her down to the ocean for daily swims, she was a frisbee dog, so I just have to throw the frisbee in, and she's in there swimming. Well, lo and behold, her skin ailment started to clear up. And it wasn't until I clued in to the fact that I had activated nanotech or Morgellons in my body did I collect that that's what she had as well. And so then I started her on a detox too. And I made sure it didn't matter what the weather was, she had her daily bath in the ocean, didn't matter. And I also had mine. So she's the one that actually got sent me in the direction of salt. Salt is a cure. So salty body. Here's another one. This is what I do not every morning, because some days I just happen to skip it for some reason, but I would say 5 out of 7 days, I take 2 teaspoons of Himalayan salt in 1 liter, or U.S., it's 1 quart of water, and I down that in about 20 minutes. Now, you can't, the first 2 or maybe even 3 days that you do this, you can't go very far away from the toilet. Because it's going to flush out your colon, and out with it will come lots of stuff. I've had fungus come out with this salt flush. At least it looks like fungus. And it's orange. It's not normal. And I've seen parasites come out as well, and we're talking just, I think, normal human parasites.
Mm-hmm.
But because I know this nanoparticulates is everywhere, it's also in those normal human parasites, so that's going to make them harder to kill.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, because they are small. They morph into things. They're not like and they do actually grow. I've seen them grow, and I've seen the live magnification of the Morgellon fibers that people have collected. I've seen them film it and have it grow within, you know, a couple of minutes, and it's growing. So I've seen it grow, too. I refuse to have any samples in my house. It just creeps me out. And I've seen some pretty wild stuff. Like all, one of them was a psychedelic spider. It would actually look like a spider, but it was blue and clear.
Oh, dear.
Tubes, blue and clear tubes. But I could only see it magnified. I could actually kind of see it with my naked eye, but not very much. But when I magnified it, and I swear to God, it was looking at me.
Whoa, that's creepy. Now, going back to what you mentioned before, you mentioned a bamboo soap. What was the name of that, or what was?
Yeah,
the...
I've got the package here. Actually,
okay.
This is it's made by a company, and it's quite reasonable, actually. The company is called Nature's Expression. It's a black box, and it just says bamboo charcoal soap, and it is completely black. And I believe a lot of the artisans, actually the artisans in my neighborhood, are starting to make a lot of soap out of activated charcoal. Now, that's another thing that you can take, and interesting enough, up here in Canada, it was banned, and that's activated charcoal. Activated charcoal is another detoxer, and actually it's very, very cheap to purchase. I know it was cheap up here in Canada, so it was probably even cheaper down in the United States. But just make sure it's activated charcoal.
Okay. And do you know why they would have banned it?
No idea.
Wow.
And it was a number of years ago. But some of the health food stores up here in Canada, they still purchase it and have it on stock. They just purchase it from the U.S. So it's not banned in the United States. It's only banned in Canada.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So go figure that one, eh? So anything that can... Now, so the 3 things I researched was heavy metal detox, radiation detox, and parasite detox. So a lot of these things I take, like pumpkin seed oil. That's a parasite killer. What else is a parasite? Or oregano oil. You can get that in an oil. Now, or a tablet form if you have a hard time putting it in your mouth, because it is very spicy. And
what about wormwood that's normally in
wormwood,
the
tablet? I have a tincture, black walnut and wormwood combination, and I have been taking that faithfully for the last few months.
And what
and,
did you notice with that one? Is
oh,
that
it calmed, yes, it was. It calmed it right down. I have purposely gone off all my natural stuff and just ate food and to see how I feel. And it so I know it helps. And I also do, I make tinctures myself. That's a cheaper way to go at cilantro. So I'm waiting for my cilantro to get big enough, and I'm going to make some cilantro tincture. So I use just regular alcohol, just regular vodka. You can also use rum. They do suggest a higher proof, but I just buy the regular stuff, and I buy it in a glass bottle. I don't buy the stuff that's in a plastic bottle. So tinctures are anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks that you let them soak, your herb soak in the alcohol, and then you just strain off the herb, whatever you're making. And you can even do marijuana. And if it was legal up here in Canada, I'd be trying marijuana right now on this to see if it would work. But it's not yet. So I have some kidney problems, so I've been focusing on my kidney and my liver, and that's dandelion root. So I actually go out in my garden and grass, and I dig up the dandelion roots, clean them all off, and made my own tincture. And boy, did that taste good. I could sit and have that as a little cocktail.
Oh, that's great.
And another
I
one
ever
that
I've tried that.
A rosemary tincture, and that's the radiation one. Radiation detox, I did make rosemary tincture, a whole bunch of it last year, so I'm still have lots of that. So I take tinctures, anything that's easy. I take tablets. I don't take vitamins. I try and eat my vitamins, but I do take all these things that help me combat those three things. So radiation, radiation, parasites, and heavy metals. That's those three that I, and then I focus on my urinary area because I have problems. I think that I just were long time ago problems. That,
well, a lot of people are having the urinary problems due to all the heavy metals and stuff. And one thing that I found was, one of my dogs was having issues making it all the way outside, and so I found a tea that's on Bell teas that you can find on the internet, and there's actually like a kidney type flush. It's a urinary type flush that you can support by drinking a tea. And I would just pour the tea right into the dog's water bowl, and within a day or two, he didn't have that problem. So it was tied in, the frequent urination and all that was tied in directly with a kidney blockage that was probably happening due to the chemtrail solution getting on the dog's paws every time he was out walking. So, I mean, our animals are affected by this maybe even more than we are because they're out picking this up on the pads of their feet. So all of that plays into their health and then into our health as well. We're out walking on the beach with our shoes kicked off and that type of thing. We're, submerged in all those chemicals, as well as like when we're out at the swimming pool, sunbathing, or we're out in the jacuzzi, or we're doing a fun day out at the park. All of those particulates are still in the air, whether we can see them or not. So it's something that everybody probably needs to detox from, even if they think they're absolutely normal and they're not experiencing the life of a targeted individual or Morgellons disease or any suffering on those levels. They're still needing to detox and to stay ahead of this game, don't you think?
Absolutely. So the diet changes is one of the biggest things. If you can't do anything else, just change your diet and get off all that genetically modified food. I've been quite the activist over the years. I've had numerous different signs on my cars. When they ran me off the road, I figured I had to put signs on my car to keep myself safe. So I put signs on my car about organized stalking, and in the beginning I didn't have a website, but I do have a website now. But I was putting on up a website that was from Canada, and get trying to get people to stop doing this to me, and it did keep me safer. The aggressive driving stopped, but then those signs come off, and then I've had smart meter signs on my car, and then I've even sent them love, at Valentine's Day paint hearts on my car. And right now I have Monsanto, anti-Monsanto signs on my car because I think there's a huge link to the genetically modified food and the nanoparticulates in it that is in all of our body, and I think it sustains the nanotech.
Yes.
And maybe even delivers some more nanotech, but I don't know about that for sure. But I think it helps sustain it. So another thing that I got rid of, actually I did get rid of this fairly early on in my detox, and that made a big difference too, was the wheat. I went gluten-free because actually I had sores that were breaking out in my mouth, and as soon as I got rid of the gluten, the sores cleared up.
Wow. Now that's
so then I went back on the gluten. I had to test it. I had to experiment. So I went back on the bread. Had a bunch of bread. Oh boy, the sores all came back again. So now that's it. I don't do gluten. And interesting enough, Dr. Mercola, I kind of follow him too. He predicts that within 5 years, all the people, 80% of the people will have gone gluten-free. There is something wrong with our wheat.
Yeah, I've heard from my chiropractor years ago after I was in a car wreck and I was doing some adjustments on that. He said, you know, get off American wheat. He said if you've got to have pasta or something like that, you know, buy the European made or, you know, a internationally based wheat, because he said they've been modifying our wheat in the United States for years. So he said we're not even really eating wheat. We're eating like a complete derivative of wheat. So
well, it certainly caused sores, and I used the MMS in the beginning to rinse out my mouth, and you would not believe the fibers and filaments that were coming out of my mouth with the MMS. I have to say that was the freakiest thing, to know that I had these things were in my mouth.
Is that like the like Clifford Carnicom's wine test, where you swish around the wine and then the filaments?
Yeah,
and
but the MMS, it's got to be a weak solution, and I don't actually recommend that everybody does it all the time. But if you do have a mouth infection, that's why I was doing it, is because to clear up this mouth infection. I didn't even need a magnifying glass to see them. So I'm telling you, I was so grossed out in the beginning at how big these things were. They obviously grow bigger inside of our bodies, because what's floating around outside is definitely not that big. But at the beginning of detox, I didn't need any kind of magnification. So I really had to focus and stay calm, because what we're talking about is parasites, right? And they're everywhere. They're in our skin. They were in my eyes. They were ears, nose. They were everywhere.
Yeah, some of our targets that we've actually had on recently have talked about the ability for their eyes to literally turn into a nanobot camera. So some of the gadgets that we're, you know, breathing in and we're inhaling, and it's coming in through our skin or through our foods, are able to literally come in and become a camera where we're literally interfacing with a computer, and they're able to do REM sleep deprivation and all this different stuff based on the nanobot technology that's already within, you know, people's bodies from the...
Yes, I have had my eyes like a camera, like an automatic shutter that would go in and out. I've had that happen involuntarily, and I couldn't figure out what was going on. But once I started detoxing, I actually pulled out, because I'd come across a video of a couple of girls sitting in the dark with the black light, and one of the girls' eyes was glowing, her pupils. So I got my black light tube and closed. It was early in the morning, so it was dark, and I closed up my bathroom and turned off the light and plugged in the black light, and it just took about 40 or 50 seconds. And the pupils of my eyes started glowing.
Whoa, wow, that's freaky.
And then I took a magnifying glass, and I could actually see pinpoints of light, and they were moving around in my pupils. So they were kind of like bouncing off of each other, but they were like very small pinpoints of light, but from a distance it just looked like your pupils are glowing. So then I started paying attention to, like, after I got out of the bath, I turned off the lights and put the black light on my naked body, and I could actually see these fibers that were still on my skin, and they were moving, and they glowed.
Oh, wow. Well, this has been a really interesting interview. I certainly appreciate you coming on, Debbie. And can you leave us with your contact information where people can find your website?
Sure. Okay, my website is basically for targeted individuals and to educate the public about what's going on. That's www.osnanaimo.org. And then my name is Debbie Newhook. I'm on Facebook. Look me up. I talk about this a lot. I talk about detoxing mostly in groups, people who don't care. I talk to everybody and tell them to detox. Everybody.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being on the show, Debbie. I appreciate all your information and your help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ruth Ann.
This was excellent. This is excellent.
Yeah, great information.
Yeah, I'd say.
Thank you.
Thank you, Debbie.
Thank you, Debbie. Thanks, Dan. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.